Today, we take you to Manchester, where the three Labour leadership candidates join me at a Guardian hustings. And life inside a refugee-run nightclub in Naples.
We were saying the other day, maybe we should start doing them in the style of each other, just to shake things up.
Go on then, let's see your Keir impression.
What's this?
I was about to do my best, another future is possible,
yes,
and then he turned off. So if you get Becky, you have to shout Green Industrial Revolution, and if you get me, you have to shout We Win Together.
Very good.
That's Labour leadership candidates Lisa Nandy, Keir Starmer and Rebecca Long-Bailey in a green room of the Exchange Auditorium in Manchester.
After about 6 hours, we decided that when this is over, we're going to go for a drink and have one drink for every hustings we've done, which is going to be a hell of a big night.
They've been travelling up and down the country for weeks. They're now ready to face an audience of 800 for the latest leadership debate organised by The Guardian and hosted by me.
We're just in a lift with all the leadership candidates and we're heading out to a stage which they have been on before in many one of their many, many Labour hustings.
From The Guardian, I'm Anushka Astana. Today in Focus, choosing Labour's next leader.
Good evening and welcome to tonight's Guardian Live event. For those of you that do use Twitter, we'd love to hear from you during...
We're in this quite large auditorium, seats about 800 people.
Peter Walker is The Guardian's political correspondent.
There's a big stage with lecterns up at the front, this bright pink backdrop with the Guardian logo on it.
And give a very warm welcome to tonight's guest.
Keir Starmer comes out first. He's the front runner. He's definitely the Booker's favourite to win. And then you've got Lisa Nandy. She's an outsider, but she's seen as been doing quite well in the race. And then you have Rebecca Long-Bailey. She is kind of seen as a choice of the Corbyn wing of the party. She's doing reasonably well, but she would have expected to be doing better.
Where are we in the race?
We are still some distance away from knowing the result. That doesn't come until April the 4th. But this week is when the Labour members actually cast their ballots. It's when they first get them in the post.
Can I have a show of hands if you think you know who you would like to be Labour leader?
And history tells us that a lot of people tend to cast their ballots in the first week.
Now, do me a favour. Keep your hands up. Keep your hands up if the others could yet change your mind. Okay, no.
Everything to
there's,
play for.
There's quite a lot to play for.
It right feels now. Like this leadership race hasn't been cutting through as much as you might expect. That's why I said at the beginning, you've all been very nice to each other. You don't really kind of want to land blows.
If I was cynical, I would say they're all shoring up their future positions in each other's shadow cabinets.
But were there things they said in their opening statements that told us what's most important to each of them?
Yeah, their visions are notably different. And basically the summaries that they did sum up what their kind of appeal to Labour members is.
We either mope around, take lumps about each other, head in hand, arguing about whose fault it was.
Keir Starmer's is very much, we have to unite as a party, stop the factional infighting. That's his main message.
Or we pull together, we unite, we rebuild.
Becky Long-Bailey is basically saying, don't ditch all the policies under the Corbyn era. She wants to keep a lot of the stuff that was in the manifesto in 2019.
And we won't win again and unite and inspire our movement if we slowly abandon these building blocks of a socialist society.
And Lisa Nandy is basically the one who's got the most, stark message.
This was no ordinary election. The entire Labour base collapsed beneath our feet when we had nurses and ex-miners turning not just away from us, but to the Tories.
She says that Labour needs to really, really rethink itself or else the party's going to die.
We get this wrong again, we won't just be out of power for another 10 years. In 10 years' time, there will be no Labour Party to vote for.
I think quite an interesting moment for me was when I asked what their biggest political regret was. And straight away, Becky Long-Bailey said...
All right, brace yourself. I'm ready. One of my biggest regrets, I think, was the way we handled Brexit.
And then turned the subject to Brexit.
It was quite interesting. Probably the feistiest moment of the night was when Becky Long-Bailey and Lisa Nandy both attacked Keir Starmer, not in a direct way, but the fact that he was the shadow Brexit secretary and shaped Labour's Brexit policy, they were both very, very critical of it. Becky Long-Bailey was saying it was basically the number one problem, and, you know, without that, then Labour would have won the election.
And it took so many other things down with it. So in that election, when we should have been talking about jobs, aspiration, industry, what the future would look like, we weren't. We were talking about Brexit and trying to justify our position, which was confusing anyway.
Lisa Nandy called it the straw that broke the camel's back.
We had half the shadow cabinet over here arguing for Remain and saying they were picking a side and they were picking Remain. We had another half of the shadow cabinet over there saying they were picking Leave and they were arguing for Leave. Between them, they managed to insult the entirety of this country, where Remainers were caricatured as liberal elitists and Leavers were caricatured as stupid racists.
And Keir Starmer kind of defended himself in quite a vigorous way. He was saying that, you know, he toured constituency after constituency.
And there was complete uniformity across the country. It was, number one, the leadership. Fairly or unfairly, rightly or wrongly, anybody who was in that campaign knows that was the number one thing that came up. I'm not saying it's right, I'm just saying let's be honest about it. The second thing was Brexit, of course.
And he was quite tough. He's basically saying that if people think it was just Brexit and if they change Brexit, well, everything's going to be fine, then Labour's going to lose the next election too.
The third thing that came up, and this is not me, this is the team's reporting to me in my own experience, was the manifesto overload. Now, whether what was in the manifesto was right or wrong, there was too much. There was a tipping point, and it didn't matter whether it was good or bad because people didn't believe we could deliver it.
I thought it was interesting how many times during the night both Lisa and Becky referenced the many men who were always making decisions. I think one of the men that they may have been talking about, even if they're being lovely and pleasant and nice on stage, yeah, is the man on the lectern at the left.
And it is. And for Keir Starmer, this is an issue that Labour have never had a permanent female leader. And we've even had some allies of Becky Long-Bailey saying he should actually stand down and let a woman win. You know, I don't think it's going to be an insurmountable problem for him, but the optics are not brilliant.
I think he says, doesn't he, that it's not just going to be me, it's going to be my team. So I expect a very female-heavy shadow cabinet should he win.
But with a man at the top.
But with a man at the top of the triangle. Okay, so Brexit is clearly an area in which there are different ideas. But another is about how to heal division within the Labour Party and what role leadership plays in that. And that came up next when I asked Becky Long-Bailey about Corbyn.
I mean, it's interesting that the frontrunner for the deputy leadership role, your friend and someone who you've said you're kind of almost running partners, Angela Rayner, has suggested that Jeremy Corbyn did not command respect in the Labour Party. Do you agree?
How did she cope with that?
She kind of intimated that the way people had interpreted Rayner's comments was slightly wrong.
Well, I know Angela very well, and I suspect what she was referring to was a lack of unity within the party, which has been rife, unfortunately, for over 4 years. Because divided parties don't win general elections.
And Becky Long-Bailey was right to say that there had been massive division within Labour. And that's why I felt it was important to actually put to Lisa Nandy whether she regretted the fact that she had been at the heart of an attempt to oust Corbyn in 2016.
It could have been quite a difficult moment for her, and it initially was, but I think she answered that quite well and ended up getting a round of applause from the room. She explained the reasons why she stepped down from the shadow cabinet.
Every difficult week, I went out to bat for the party. And at the end of that week, I went to see Jeremy Corbyn to try and sort it out. And I was told by a very senior member of the shadow cabinet that there was going to be no attempt to sort it out, that we were going to prosecute this factional war until one side had won. I'm not prepared to stand for that. I won't stand for factionalism on the back benches or on the front bench either. And the reason that I won't is because it fundamentally lets down the people that we seek to represent.
And that wasn't the only kind of clash between Lisa and Becky over division. I mean, there was a point later on where we talked about one of Becky's policies that is perhaps most controversial for open selections, which will allow anyone to challenge a sitting MP.
And then if the MP's a great MP, they'll have that good relationship with their members and they will be rewarded and they'll be picked. But if we've got great talent available in a constituency that needs encouragement, the next Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, for example, that's our key to winning the next general election, that would allow them to rise up through the party and be recognised.
Why are people so concerned about that?
This was a very, very big thing during the Corbyn era because it was seen as a way for local Labour parties, which have had an influx of new, largely pro-Jeremy Corbyn members, to try and unseat the sitting Labour MP who's not kind of so in tune with them. And ahead of the election, there were quite a few kind of brutal fights.
Do you agree with that, Lisa?
No, I don't, because the MPs I'd like to get rid of are Tory ones, not Labour ones. And the truth is that we spent months going through this new selection process. We've always had a process where members can trigger their MP, and that's right, absolutely right. But what it produced was women and ethnic minorities who were disproportionately targeted. If we had an Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez in the Labour Party, it would be her and not the older white male MPs who were targeted. That's the lesson of the last few months.
They all talk about party unity, but I guess Keir Starmer's team will hope that disagreements like the one we just heard will help him seem like the most unifying candidate. I just want to talk about him because he's clearly presenting himself as Mr. Nice Guy. He doesn't want to have a go at the others on stage. But I did think there was a moment on the night where we saw a different side of him at my expense when I asked him about his answer to LBC's Nick Ferrari.
Whether it's true that the most exciting thing you've ever done is take your kids to the football.
Now, these questions are somehow supposed to be a measure of us. And they're so pathetic.
Wasn't my question.
No, but
he got slightly annoyed with you then, didn't he?
He did.
I think you got some of Nick Ferrari's, like, flack. But with this, he got kind of slightly emotional. He was basically saying, look, it's been an incredibly difficult time for him.
Just let me deal with it, because in the last 4 weeks, my wife's mum has died. And we've been in intensive care with her before she died for 17 days. And I've been trying to be the best husband I can be to my wife and the best dad I can be to my grieving children. And then I'm asked, what's the most exciting thing you've done? And I'm judged on that. I know who I am. I know what I stand for.
And it was quite a risky strategy to do this kind of moral outrage, but it got the crowd on his side.
So I was wondering how to come back to that point on stage, and I decided to ask him a question that I really wanted to put to him and not to the others.
I mean, you mentioned your kids, and I'm just really interested in this, and I kind of want to ask Keir this because I feel like you probably get this question the least. This is a big job. How are you going to balance it with your family life?
It's really difficult. It's really, really difficult. And my experience was, coming in as an MP, everybody wants you to do something every night of the week, and you feel important and you book your diary, and it's the wrong thing to do. So one of the things that I've done so far is to say I will always be in on a Friday night with our family in our house.
And I thought he was quite interesting in response.
He was really interesting on that, and that question very much won the crowd back on your side as well. It was good.
Phew. By this part of the evening, we were starting to get a sense of how different they are as candidates. I guess the next step was to find out what would they be like as a leader. So I asked them to kind of throw their minds forward to April the 4th after they've done another 300 hustings or something and imagine that they've just been named leader of the Labour Party. What can we expect each of them to do straight away?
All three of them named a very, very robust response to Labour's anti-Semitism crisis as one of the first things they need to do.
And we've got to put in place an independent complaints process as quickly as possible. And that's not just for anti-Semitism, that's for all forms of discrimination.
I think anti-Semitism was a major problem for us because we lost our moral compass and we lost our right to hold the Tories to account about their huge failures over Islamophobia.
And I would say, I want to know what's going on with these cases. I want them on my desk every Friday. Because I know from running a big organisation, if you've got a line of sight on something, things change. And I personally want to rebuild that relationship with the Jewish communities.
And it is going to be a big issue because reasonably soon, the Equality and Human Rights Commission's report in the way Labour has dealt with this is going to land on their desk. And it's going to be fairly critical.
What else did Becky say?
One of the things she said that Labour had to get immediately ready for, which is a perfectly good point, is there's going to be local council elections in May. And, you know, in response to the many gains the Tories made in the 2019 election.
Because the Conservatives have parked their tanks on our lawns. We know that in the seats that they've won from us, they've already started to heavily resource those areas. And we're going to have a fight on our hands to rebuild trust with our communities.
And what about Lisa?
Lisa very much went on about this kind of localism agenda that she's got. She wants to devolve some power down to many of the local constituency Labour parties. She was talking about trying to get local people decide how kind of certain national systems like universal credit work in their local areas. Obviously, as opposition leader, you can't do that. But she's saying she'd want to present the findings to Boris Johnson and say here's a better way of doing it.
And she said she would move Labour HQ.
Because we cannot claim to stand for the whole of this country if we continue to make decisions behind the desk by a small group of men in central
London.
Where
would you move it to?
It won't do. Warrington.
Warrington?
Yeah. Which probably made a lot of people who work at the Labour HQ in London kind of prick up their ears and think, oh, really? But again, it went down really well.
I tried to get Keir to suggest that he would do the same, but he wasn't committing to that one. What did he have to say about day one?
Keir's response was a bit more vague, but going very much back to this whole unity theme that he's got, he said he'd want to set a unified tone from the very, very top. And he made the point he'd want to immediately start to kind of tackle and take on Boris Johnson, perhaps a bit more than the current leadership has been doing.
Boris Johnson isn't some cuddly clown. He's a really dangerous man, and we need to take him on in Parliament and across the country and be seen to be doing that as a very, very effective opposition.
One of the first things they're going to have to do is take on Boris Johnson at Prime Minister's questions in Parliament every week, which you report on. How do you think they'll do?
I mean, for any of them, it's going to be this very, very intimidating atmosphere because they'll be walking into the chamber, which will be packed with many, many more Tory MPs, and they'll be very loud. They'll be trying to intimidate the new Labour leader.
Well, he's not known for his forensic relationship with detail, is he? So I think that is a good start.
Becky Long-Bailey's answer to that question was quite interesting.
I also don't think he'd be able to cope with a bolshy northern woman who says things as they actually are.
In interviews he's done in the past, I've sometimes thought, it's just a personal observation, that Boris Johnson doesn't like being interviewed by kind of women who are reasonably strong-minded towards him. So that could be tricky. I mean, they've all got their kind of strengths in this. I think Lisa Nandy would be very, very good too. And she'd have a similar kind of style possibly to Becky in that she's quite straight talking. She's a northern woman. She'd be very, very different to Boris Johnson. Keir Starmer's team believe that whilst he will be another white middle-aged man facing off against a white middle-aged man, his big difference is that Boris Johnson is famously bad on the kind of detail. He's going to be facing someone who, whilst he can at times be a slightly boring speaker, you could say, his grasp of detail is very, very good. He's a QC. He's one of the most talented QCs of his generation. And I think Boris Johnson might, in a way, find that quite tricky too, to face someone who just is prepared himself very well and knows his brief.
One thing they seem to agree on was that one challenge in facing Boris Johnson is finding a way to communicate that can take on those powerful slogans he's had, like take back control, get Brexit done.
Got to recognise that historically, and this goes back over the last 40 years, we've never explained ourselves in a way that appeals to many of our voters. We've not spoken about their aspirations.
And it was pretty clear on the night that there's quite a lot of agreement on policy areas, for example, in favour of a more liberal immigration policy. But the question is how to sell it.
And when people rejected free movement, it wasn't a rejection of the nurses who come and work at our hospital. In fact, people in Wigan are as warm and welcoming and decent and tolerant as anybody else. We're the people who set up the Support for New Arrivals project. We're the people who run the far right out of town. But what they were angry about was the sentiment that we were celebrating nurses coming to work in the hospital at the same time as the Tories had got rid of the education maintenance allowance and the nursing bursary, and their children couldn't work in that hospital.
And then Becky and Keir talked passionately about the Green New Deal.
It would have tackled the big issue of our time, but it would have turned it into an economic opportunity.
I didn't detect in the last general election that people wanted things to stay the same. I genuinely think people wanted change.
And an audience member asked Lisa whether she supported the policy.
Well, there's a bit of kind of to-ing and fro-ing as who's the architect of the Green New Deal, because this is something that was Becky Long-Bailey's kind of policy area in the 2019 election, so she's very keen to have it as, you know, her thing. But Lisa Nandy was saying that when she was in the shadow cabinet, she came up with the first, you know, kind of version of this. But she again says it should be about kind of selling it to people. She's saying,
what we really mean is cleaner, more reliable, better buses in Bassetlaw and home insulation in Warrington that cuts energy bills for families and clean energy jobs in Grimsby so that the people of Grimsby can power us through the next generation just like they powered us through the last. That's the positive transformational agenda that will win in Britain, and we've got to go out and make the case for it and win.
So it shouldn't be presenting to people as this is this revolution that's going to change, you know, everything. It'll just make your life cheaper and better.
They also talked about the housing crisis and more devolution. And then I turned to another area that isn't always an easy sell on the doorstep, perhaps, but was certainly an easy sell at a Guardian Live event, was the mention of electoral reform.
Would all of you support PR?
We love electoral reform here at The Guardian.
We do love electoral reform, and it's really important for the Labour Party to consider it. It's always resisted it in the past because it hasn't been in its interest. Could we expect any of these guys to bring in a proportional voting system?
Keir Starmer was the first one to be asked about that.
I'm very open to the idea that we change our voting system because I think for millions of people, particularly in safe seats, they feel their vote doesn't count.
I certainly listened to his answer thinking he'd back PR, but when I read it back, he just said he wanted to change the electoral system. So it's not quite clear what that was. And Lisa Nandy has been very, very pro-PR in the past. She's worked with Caroline Lucas from the Greens about working with other parties. So, I mean, I think this is very much a debate that's going to wait for the new leader, but it will come.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Gary Lloyd, Lee CLP. So I'm very, very grateful for the references that have been made to Lee, and your observations are absolutely spot on.
Towards the end of the night, an audience member from the constituency of Lee in the Northwest, which had been Labour since 1922 until December, said...
Labour lost the general election in December by a landslide, but did we win the argument?
And he quoted Jeremy Corbyn 2 days after the election, suggesting that losing the election didn't mean losing the arguments.
Keir Starmer's response to that was really very, very strong.
When you lose, there's a cost to losing an election, and it's paid by the millions of people who needed change. And therefore, we can't pretend there was any good that came out of that general election.
So that's the problem in the North and in the Midlands. But there's another issue, isn't there? And it's Scotland.
And if you can't win back people in Scotland, does Labour ever have a chance of building a majority again?
So, no, we don't. If we don't win back Scotland, then we're not going to be a national party of government. That's really clear.
I only had time to put that to one candidate, which was Lisa Nandy, but she clearly thought it was a big problem.
For the ex-Labour voters who turned Tory, they felt that they'd had to vote Tory in order to defend the United Kingdom because they felt that Labour hadn't stood up loudly and clearly enough, especially in Westminster, in defence of the United Kingdom.
And her prescription for it is to make Labour a much more strongly pro-union party. You know, again, this is an argument that's going to run and run.
I mean, just tell me, after this event, but also from what you've seen in this contest, what have we learned about what type of Labour leader each of them would be?
I mean, the first thing to point out is that however polite and nice they are to each other, you know, at these events, behind the scenes, their teams and allies are kind of briefing against each other. So it's just as brutal in many ways as any other political fight. Going in no particular order, Keir Starmer, I think we've always known, would be a kind of safe choice. And his mantra is very much unity, unity, unity. Make Labour electable, presentable, like a kind of serious party. I think we saw at the event that he can also be a bit more human than maybe sometimes build. Lisa Nandy's mantra is very much about making Labour much more localised, but also just having to fundamentally rethink the party and use 2019 as a starting point to kind of rebuild it. She seemed to, again, do quite well. She's performed reasonably well in these events so far, and the crowd seemed to like a lot of what she said. Becky Long-Bailey is, to an extent, slightly cursed by the fact that she's seen as a continuity Corbyn candidate, and that's brought her a lot of support from within the party, but it's maybe given her slightly less flexibility. But I think we have seen her over the course of the race start to open up a bit. There was some criticism that, you know, during the general election, she was very, very much on message and wouldn't let go. But some of her answers, you know, at the event were actually really good and quite personal. It was a kind of new side to her.
And can I ask you just one last question? They're trying to win over Labour members right now. And I pointed out to them at one point during the evening that Labour members, data shows, are significantly more socially liberal and actually more left-wing economically than the country as a whole, even than Labour voters. Will we expect them to change their message when they win this contest?
Change their approach, maybe. I think that's why they're all trying to keep their specific messages and promises very, very vague, because they don't want to become tied to anything in particular. This is going to be the very, very difficult one, because the races are completely different things. Winning over Labour members takes a certain kind of skill set. And I guess, as we saw in the last election, you know, with Jeremy Corbyn, he was enormously popular with Labour members and still is, but that wasn't enough to win over the country. And this is going to be the big challenge. And I think if Keir Starmer wins, and I think, you know, the polls are certainly pointing towards that, I think it could be because Labour members are almost trying to second guess a leader they think might go down well with their, you know, friends and neighbours who are not Labour members. They might be right, they might be wrong, but only time's going to tell.
We are out of time, but before we go, hands up anyone who's been persuaded. Oh, there you go. Quite a few people there have changed their minds tonight.
Peter, thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Peter Walker, The Guardian's political correspondent. He and the whole Westminster team are following this race. Do read their stuff on the website, including our sketch writer John Crace's take on the night of the hustings. I'd also like to thank you for comments and reviews relating to Today in Focus. Do keep them coming, especially if you also fancy giving us a 5-star review. Coming up, inside a nightclub in Naples run by refugees.
Too often in science podcasts, we hear voices not of the people who might be affected by new discoveries, but of those who made them. What if we flip that on its head?
My daughter's got an extra chromosome, and I would absolutely delete that. And it's not to change her, it's to change that extra chromosome that holds her back.
With our Common Threads podcast, we travelled around the country to hear people's questions, hopes and fears when it comes to something called gene editing.
I'd say that he's very happy in his skin. The only person that has suffered because of him is me.
To have a listen, just search Common Threads on your podcast app.
Now, Yankuba Fati was a second year biochemistry student in the Gambia when he had to flee the country after protesting for the restoration of student grants. After a long journey through the desert, as a prisoner and a slave in Libya, and across the Mediterranean Sea, Yankuba found himself in Naples, where he hoped to build a new life. Instead, he ended up in limbo. Asylum seekers must wait for years in the hope of acquiring refugee status and their official papers. During this time, they are unable to work and regularly face brutal racism. A new Guardian documentary, Taranga, named after a refugee-run nightclub, explores Naples through the eyes of Yankuba and other asylum seekers.
Right in the heart of Naples, you get into this club, walk down the stairs, past this lovely African lady who's going to take your jacket, and then you walk right into this safe space. You have black people sit over there. You've got jumping lights, different colours. You have this Italian lady selling beverages, alcohol and juice. Then an African bit playing, and everybody gets up and everybody starts dancing. Everybody gets into the mood. Everybody allows the vibe flow through them. That's basically a taranga for you. It's an amazing space to feel alive and feel like you loved and feel like you're home away from home. It's basically heaven.
Waiting in Naples for your papers is just crazy. You feel like you're useless. You feel like you can't do anything. You didn't have the documents to go to school. And I find myself not being able to do the simplest of things, like go to certain public spaces, like the gym, the park, for example, not only because I don't have papers, but because of the intense, blatant racism that I face as a black person, and also as an immigrant in Italy. To get the permit, on average, people waited for like 5 years. for someone like me who's got dreams of going to university, completing university and having my bachelor's in 3 years and probably having my master's in an additional 2 years, if you tell me that 5 years is what it needs to take to get my document, that's a huge disappointment to me. Migrants have hopes, they've got dreams, they left their countries not because they wanted to, but because they are forced to, either be politically, like in my case, or economically. A lot of people do not understand this. Big up to where me from, Mama Land. Hear me attack. So you get into Taranga, you don't only see black people, you don't only see migrants, you have citizens also, Italians. They get there, they see what migrants are. Basically, what they see of migrants on TV and media is migrants selling drugs and migrants have killed so-and-so people, migrants carry diseases and stuff like that. But there you are, music playing, you've seen, they have dreams, they want to feel alive like you do, they're humans like you, they're dancing to the same music like you. The only thing that you have different is you're a citizen and they are not a citizen. But right there, at that moment, you're taking a look into the lives of migrants and music has the power to do that.
That was Yankuba Fatty. Do check out the fantastic Taranga film on the website. The music was by Doza Gang, a Naples-based group of refugees from the Gambia. Happily, since the making of the film, Yankuba has now received an offer to study criminology and Italian at the University of Bangor. The filmmakers have set up a fund to help him to get there at tarangathedocumentary.com. That's it for this week. My thanks to Peter Walker and Yankuba Fatty. This episode was produced by Elizabeth Cassin and Courtney Youssef. Sound design was by Axel Cacoutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. Have a lovely weekend and we'll be back on Monday. You have to make it and go on, like one gone, and the next man gone.